The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, our great friends at both dealerships. At Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, General Manager Brian Danahy tells us the 2019s have arrived, so the 2018s got to go. It's your last call to save at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa with the season's best deals. Lease 2018 Escalades, just $859 a month. Hurry to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, but they're always there at edmorescadillactampa.com. So many offers at the website, and as well as you see at joebucksfan.com and at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, just east of 75 on Causeway Boulevard. The 2019 XT4 is now in stock and ready for immediate delivery. 39.5-inch, best-in-class rear leg room. So many options. You got to check it out at edmorescadillacbrandon.com. And, of course, the season's best sales event continues there. I'm looking at their website now. A new 2019 Cadillac CTS lease, $419 per month. See the dealer for all the details. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, proud presenters of all of Ira's work at joebucksfan.com, and such tremendous supporters of our Tampa Bay community in all of their charitable endeavors. Get to edmorescadillactampa.com, edmorescadillacbrandon.com. Here's Ira.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, the Ira Kaufman Podcast is on. The Sage of Tampa Bay Sports is in the house, and that is Mr. Ira Kaufman. Who could forget him? He is just the man across Tampa Bay. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper is here, and the Sage, you are looking good in your winter gear. You got your frosty hair. How are you, Sage?
I'm doing well. I was in the Buck locker room with Mr. DeKemper on Wednesday, and the big news, Lee, in the locker room were cleats. For a cause, I could care less. I'm walking in there with flip-flops that have holes on the bottom, and then they got $600 cleats over there, Steve. I can't handle it. Ping-pong going on. We got basketball going on. Mike Evans coming to the forefront, proud of his 1,000-yard season. You know what he's proud of? He's averaging 17 yards a catch, Steve. That's quite a bump, Lee. He's talked for years now about getting better after the catch. You know what? Tell me if I'm wrong about this. It's not so much the yards that Evans is getting after the catch this year. He's catching longer balls downfield. They're deeper passes, and I think that's why he's averaging 17. I kidded him at the end of his conversation. I said, hey, you're in DeSean Jackson territory with 17. Speaking of DeSean Jackson, Lee, the fans are riled up. You know, they used to pick on McCoy. They used to pick on Winston. Now they're picking on Jackson. He can't win. They're breaking down his production with Fitzpatrick, his production with Winston. I'm going to give both sides of this. One, he's the only guy that Winston seems to be struggling to find. But two, and you can't forget about two, Fitzpatrick didn't have any trouble finding him. What is going on, DeKemper?
I'll give the guy credit because he's the one that did the research. Greg Allman had passes targeted to Jackson first two games, which I think Fitzpatrick was perfect throwing to DeSean.
And the Bucs also happened to be perfect at 2-0.
And the last eight games, the last nine games, I should say, just as miserable as Jameis.
Yet your head coach continues to say he's wide open.
He said it the other night with Dan Lucas.
Steve, he's going out of his way to keep saying that Jackson's wide open. Why is he doing that, Steve, if it's not true?
Why are you asking me? Ira, you're the sage. What the hell's going on here?
he's been saying this for a long time.
Well, I for the longest time thought that it was sort of mind games a little bit. DeSean Jackson needs to be stroked.
And you said he didn't want to piss off DeSean Jackson.
Bingo. And Jameis is the kind of guy, if he stunk, he can handle it. He can handle Cutter saying, well, Jameis should have done this. Jameis would probably say, yeah, he's right. Whereas DeSean would get all flustered. Now I'm not so sure. Now I'm not going to say it, but there are fans out there that think that Cutter's turned on Jameis. They don't think he trusts Jameis. Obviously, he benched Jameis. Cutter, obviously, I'm going to guess he read my story Tuesday, or Monday, excuse me, where I wrote that I didn't like the fact that with 9 seconds left, he decided to kick a field goal. Of all people, Cutter, with the way kickers have all but destroyed his tenure with Tampa Bay, he decided to go to trust a kicker rather than Jameis. I thought that was wrong, and that apparently got under Cutter's skin because his press conference Monday, I think it was Greg Allman, that asked him about it. Well, he didn't like that.
We can't have Cutter responding to a DeKemper story. So by the way, your name wasn't on it, DeKemper. He don't know that you wrote that.
Well,
he thought it was Isbitt.
But yeah, it's true. Well, it was Joe Buck's fan, but it was my story. There are fans out there that think that Cutter has turned on Jameis. Now, I don't know if that's baloney
or
not.
Hold on, Lee. My question was referring to DeSean Jackson.
I've got an answer.
Does DeSean Jackson deserve the criticism, Mr. Isbitt?
I've got the answers, Ira. How about that?
Go.
But first, I want to make sure everybody knows that your podcast is presented by our good friends at Edmore's Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher. Those fantastic offers you heard to start the podcast, they're going to change in December. So you want to pay attention to all the year-end offers, but most importantly, get to edmorescadillactampa.com. And Ira, quick quiz for you. What fantastic Cadillac dealership lives on Causeway Boulevard in Brandon?
Well, Ed Morse Cadillac Brand.
Oh, you won the prize, Ira. Very good.
What do I get, Steve?
A bit of honey?
You get to come back next podcast. And, of course, that you can also find them at edmorescadillacbrandon.com. Now, DeSean Jackson, Ira, the reason Cutter keeps saying he's open is because he is open. So there's that. And that reality can't be denied. Chemistry goes both ways. I'm not blaming anybody, but the chemistry isn't there for whatever reason. I don't think DeSean Jackson, who's trying to make another $10 million next year from some team, wants to not have yards. Because he knows if he can click that 1,000-yard meter next year or this year, that's going to put him in the right. He's going to have all the tape and the production he needs for someone to make him a number one or a 1A. But here's the thing, though. I thought when Cutter said, we flat out missed him 5 times, if you look at that first pass to DeSean Jackson in that game, you go watch it 5 times, you know what? That's a nice breakup by the defender. Maybe Jackson could have come back to the ball a little harder. Maybe Jameis could have thrown it with some more zip. Only Cutter knows exactly how that ball's supposed to go, but I don't know if that's a flat-out miss by anybody. So that goes to Lee's theory of Cutter always seems to lean toward the side of protecting DeSean Jackson. Crazy Michael Clayton, who's on the former blocking icon of the Bucks, who's on local radio a lot, he was talking about how on the deep shot, he went into deep X's and O's of how, well, you know what? I don't know for sure, but it sure seemed to me like DeSean Jackson didn't cut the right angle on the route. And, I don't know. And he put it in the light of, I'm not sure Dirk Cutter knows how to coach that. And he explained how the hips turn on a defender or whatever. And
when that happens,
that
it makes it look like the quarterback's at fault.
So,
when that happens.
Now, I'm not saying Michael Clayton is right, but, you know, that ball from Jameis traveled 62 yards in the air. What's the odds of that thing getting completed anyway? So that's a whole other story.
By the way, they got a pass interference call on a long ball to DeSean Jackson, and I could hear DeKemper in the press box saying, that was for you, Sage.
Yeah, yep. We celebrated that last podcast, and Ira, but look, here's the thing, and this is the crazy thing, and the reality of this all is Jameis has good chemistry with everybody else. You can't even deny it. So why target a guy 8 times who he doesn't have good chemistry with? At some point, you have to say, well, hey, D-Jack, you're great, but Jameis can't hit you, and I'm sorry, we got to cut your reps, or we're going to have to get more creative with letting you run the ball like he did in the last game, and he's already run for a touchdown, returning punts that he doesn't want to do, and maybe working in the slot here and there. I don't know, Ira. It's messy, but he won't be here next year.
Bottom line is he's not going to be here. Steve just said it. He's not going to be here next year.
You were the first one
to say
that.
And I was the first one.
I don't even think the ink was dry on his contract. You said he will not finish 3 years here.
I did. And
you were ahead of the curve, as they say.
That's what I try. That's what I try, my friend. And sure enough, with O.J. Howard out, who catches the first touchdown pass? Brate. Did you see the pattern Brate ran? It was fabulous. Absolutely fabulous on that touchdown. Jameis needed a lot of time, and Brate must have changed the direction about 4 times.
Yeah, it was a broken play, and they just know where, they knew they trusted each other.
Speaking of receptions and chemistry and things of that nature, Cam Brate was a nothing tight end until Jameis got here. And as Cutter himself has said before, for whatever reason, those guys clicked immediately. And you could argue Jameis made Brate. So when people scream about Jameis and DeSean Jackson, Brate's a borderline Pro Bowl tight end. He really is. Should have been Pro Bowl a couple years ago. Jameis made him. You can make an argument because he was a nothing tight end until Jameis came here.
Jameis trusts Cameron Brate. He just trusts him.
He trusts Humphreys. He trusts Godwin. It's obvious. He trusts Evans. So, you know, there's something wrong with him and Jackson, but who to blame is sort of irrelevant. If it's not working, you have so many other weapons to go to.
And that's people get mad at me when I say that. Fans, they get really nuts at me when I say, if something isn't working, why do you keep going to that well? And I always use the analogy, a baseball pitcher. You got a good pitcher, but for whatever reason, he can't throw a slider. For whatever reason.
On that night. Yeah.
No, period. He can't throw a slider. So wouldn't the manager be wrong in ordering him to throw a slider, and then if the ball winds up in the bleachers, you get mad at the pitcher? That's what Jameis and Jackson, if the chemistry isn't there, if it's not working, why are you going to it all the time? And when it continues to not work, why do you blame the guy who threw it?
Now, Steve, we always like to talk on this podcast about the game within the game when we preview a contest.
We do?
We do. So let's start it today if we haven't done it all season. Now, look, defensively, you've already touched on it. McCaffrey's an animal. He touches the ball all kinds. But what I think is even more intriguing, Steve, and give me you guys' opinions on this, Mr. Mike Evans, who we talked about already, he's over 1,000 yards. We talked about him in the podcast. Taken out of the game in Charlotte. Almost self-admittedly, and Cutter, I thought, went out of his way. Didn't show up, Mike, you know, in words to that effect. Bradberry all over him. Now, we talked to Evans on Wednesday. He said, hey, Bradberry knew he had help over the top, so he's all over me, shadowing me, tight as can be. Well, for whatever the reason is, and he admits that Bradberry's a good player, third-year player, that's, you know, he's only going to get better for Carolina. That was a draft gem for them.
Everybody drafts well in this division but the Bucks.
When Evans plays like he does, Steve, I wrote this the other day. When Evans plays like he does on Sunday, he's top five. He's top five. And there's a lot of great receivers. Nobody ever talks about Adam Thielen. He's having a monster year.
He is.
Absolutely monster year. Everybody seems to have a guy. You know, every team's got a guy. Cincinnati's got a guy. But then, you know, there are times like the game in Charlotte, Steve, when you don't notice Mike Evans. And I said he didn't compete enough that day. Let's see what happens on Sunday. He's playing at home. Mr. Bradberry, I got a feeling you might be in for a long day, Mr. Bradberry. Look out.
Yeah, that's a nice – I like that. I like that, Ira. Nice look into this game. You know Evans wants some payback. The Bucs still put up 4 touchdowns against the Panthers last time. And what so many people forget is with 14 minutes left, Bucks were trailing by 7.
By 7.
They came all the way back. And, of course, the defense crapped the bed and you know, whatever. A couple of penalties on offense and a late pick by Fitzpatrick. But there shouldn't be a giant gap between these two teams. We're going to give our picks later and get into some of that, Ira. Maybe there will even be a couple of surprises with those picks. Who knows?
Now, let's not forget Carolina jumped out to an inordinate lead in that game.
Yeah.
It was getting crazy.
But still, if you come back, I mean, look, the Bucs brought it to within 14 in the third quarter. At that point, it's a game. And then it was 7 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's a ball game. And, you know, hopefully the Bucs find a way to start quickly again. Before we hit the locker room scene today, we're at 1 Buck, and you guys were buzzing around. The shoes, I know you loved the shoes thing. Jordan Whitehead wanted to point this out. He now has more solo tackles this year than Justin Evans in less playing time, as many passes defensed. He's coming off his best game. He's a rookie. I mean, we got to say, hey, kudos. We've hammered these coaches, these defensive backs coaches. They developed this guy pretty well, and he's ready to go.
We've also hammered Jason Light on some of his draft picks.
And we have. And, you know, I'm really dying to see how this kid keeps building on this, because a lot of times you get a rookie, and we all want this for Via, right? You get a rookie who has that breakthrough game and starts to develop. Can they close it out strong like Chris Godwin did last year? You know, if Whitehead and Vea can actually do that, if they can actually pull that off, then you know what? The Bucs are probably going to win a few games here.
A lot of times rookies hit the December wall. I think it happened to Beckwith last year. Played very, very good football for 3 months.
Yep.
But Vea hasn't played a lot of football, so I don't think it's going to be a factor.
Valid point. He was out for 7 weeks to start his career, basically.
Now, speaking of Vea, and you're talking about the locker room, I asked Coach Duffner on Wednesday about Vita Vea. Lee, because DeKemper wouldn't ask the question, so I got to ask it. Somebody's got to ask it from Joe Bucks fan. So I said, what were the keys to Vea's emergence as a force, you know, against the 49ers? Lee, you were there. Immediately, Duffner didn't want to talk about technique, doing this, doing that. He talked about preparation. Preparation. Film work. What do I need to do against these particular guys? How do they play? And I thought that was interesting because we were focused so much on Vea not being able to shed blocks and the Velcro with Derek Brooks dropped on him, the OG Vita Vea that Warren Sapp said to me about him, on the ground Vita Vea. I mean, only Sapp can come up with a line like that. So preparation, Lee, you know, it's a lost art. But I used to say Rondé Barber was the smartest player in the NFL. The smartest. I used to say, with all due respect to Peyton Manning and his cohorts, Rondé Barber, film work, Lee. Look, we all know, when we went into a test and we weren't prepared, we knew we weren't going to do well. You're not going to do well. If you were prepared, you had confidence. Same thing applies to the football field, Lee, and applies to this podcast, DeKemper. I want you to prepare for this podcast a little better.
I'm slacking, huh?
What'd you think Duffner was referring to in terms of preparation?
Oh, I just thought it was very interesting. I'm like you. Preparation is critical when it comes to football. Absolutely critical. And maybe that tells me he thought he could just show up and throw his weight around, his strength, I should say, and things would happen, and it's not.
Was Vea slacking off a little bit in the film room, Stephen?
Well, you know, I did watch the video of Duffner saying that, and it's hard to really answer that because there's preparation where I think our minds immediately go to the negative, like, oh, the dude wasn't prepared. But maybe he's just been learning more about how to watch the film, which most players will tell you that's an art in itself, is to, okay, I'm preparing, but do I really know exactly what I'm looking at? Maybe he's learning more from studying offensive linemen. Who knows? You know, the more you play, the more video you have on yourself. So you can watch your own failures, and maybe he's just learning more from his own screw-ups. I don't know. But I'm not going to lean that he wasn't watching, just that maybe he's getting better at what he's studying. Better student.
Okay.
All right, Sage. You like that. I got a Sage nod there. I appreciate that.
That's a nod and a smirk.
Anything else in the locker room? I know it's kind of a weird time with the Bucks because they're sort of out of it, but they're not. And, you know, they got a lot to prove, but they're not all down in the dumps. Anything, any vibe you're getting in there?
Well,
I got something.
I continue to notice the absence of Brent Grimes. I don't want to pick on Brent Grimes, but the guy's never around.
He rarely – well, you're not wrong, but isn't that the norm for him? Wasn't the last couple of years.
I don't remember it that much last year. I don't remember it.
I can't remember the last time he has been in the locker room. Honestly, I don't.
I tracked him one time after a game, and I had to, you know, I pulled the calf muscle trying to track him down.
No, neither was DeSean Jackson in the
locker
room.
What'd you see in the locker room?
I saw you with a baseline shot. That's what I saw you with.
Well, I was retrieving a basket. Who was that shooting? Jacquizz Rogers or somebody? Yeah, yeah. By the way, he was throwing up a lot of air balls.
Were you posting him up because you got an inch on him or something? I could see that already.
And it was a fierce ping pong game going on.
Didn't notice that.
Yeah, it was
maybe
fierce.
I'm numb to those.
And I saw crazy Alex Kappa. You know, what a just a fun-loving guy, Steve. And it was great to see him in action. Now, I thought he was getting tossed around like a rag doll, and I think you thought he played fairly well.
He had one play where he really got abused, but otherwise, I thought he was okay. Benenac probably going through that game probably had about 7 plays where they're shaking their head in the film room, and that's just who this guy is, and it's crazy that J.R. Sweezy is anchoring the stout Seattle run game, which is probably going to get them to the playoffs.
What does that tell you, Ira, that J.R. Sweezy is playing well for Seattle
as
soon as he leaves here?
You know, and you know, one thing that was lost in the shuffle when you win, you know, what was it, 29-7? Or what was last week's final? 27-9. Yeah. When you win 27-9, Lee, you're not going to immediately focus on, hey, they didn't run the ball very well. Peyton Barber, you know, he had a rushing touchdown, but he wasn't a consistent runner. Like, on the other side, you know, the Niner runner had 105 yards.
Yeah.
You know, Steve, they can't. And the week before, they ran the ball very well against the Giants. There's not a lot of consistency in the run blocking, and we'll see what happens against Carolina. Carolina's got a stout defense.
Could that be? I mean, a lot of people are glossing over this when they're scoffing Jameis having a good game. Oh, the 49ers. they had a fairly decent defense. I mean, number 10 defense, if I recall correctly. Could that have been one reason why Barber didn't do so well?
That Buckner guy up front, he's a stud for the Niners.
Yeah, yeah. Very, DeForest very Buckner. Good player. And, you know, the Giants, their defense is lousy. So,
I just want to see a string of where they run for 125 yards, you know, 5 weeks in a row.
Peyton Barber he left that game for like three or four series in a row, which leads me to believe he was injured in that game. Now, he's been battling some nagging stuff all year, but he was really strong early, and then he disappeared, and then he came back, which leads me to believe he was getting worked on. Maybe we're recording this before we see the injury report. And no one's really asked that question yet, but that's my gut feeling, Ira, because he just didn't get the load, and Cutter has said over and over, give him the touches, keep giving him the looks, he's going to get better, and he sort of proved that against the Giants. Jameis, the crazy thing is, the Bucs dominated that game, and Jameis threw the ball 38 times, and the Bucs dominated, which lets you know they really are a pass-first team.
And guys, I noticed, I forgot who had this note, but somebody said that Donovan Smith didn't give up a pressure in like 40-something dropbacks. And I thought he played very well the week before against the Giants. Maybe Smith's a guy who's finishing the season strong with money on the line.
Yeah, exactly.
See? Money on the line.
You're probably getting that from one of the rare times I decided to use the...
Was that PFF?
Yeah, the Tribe. Used the Tribe's information. Basically, I was just trying to stir things up. Like, I didn't even comment. Like, okay, here it is. You guys go have at it, you know, because Donovan Smith's not a popular player. You heard about that missionary over in the South?
Yes.
Well, that's where...
You can't talk about that on the public
airwaves. Yeah, that's where the PFF Tribe originates from. You know, there was a helicopter that dropped a modem off on them. So they figured out how to use the modem, but they tried to shoot the helicopter down with their arrows.
Well, let's hope they're not into cannibalism over there.
I was like, missionary. I learned about that in hygiene back in 1959. What are you talking about?
I turned my back on that when I was 18 over there, Steve.
Oh.
What else is going on over there?
That's fantastic. Fantastic. Now, your podcast. Let me get this out. Podcast is available on Google Play and iTunes, as well as Podbean. Those are three.
When are you going to get me back on the charts?
Those are three major podcast platforms. Now, when I post the podcast, just for the folks who ask, when I post the podcast, it's done through a mechanism where all of the podcast pops on JoeBucksFan.com, where you can hear it first, and it immediately goes to these platforms where you're all approved, and there's a whole technical pipeline for it to upload there. They can take their time if they want. They might have technical glitches. Sometimes they review things for inappropriate content because we have to say that there really isn't any on the podcast. So if there's a delay, folks, that's not on us. And there was a delay for your last podcast. I don't know why, but I know it's all there now. If you subscribe to the podcast, you get a free alert. That's only through those applications. Otherwise, you can follow us on Twitter at JoeBucksFan or Ira. Tweets out the podcast, or just keep coming to JoeBucksFan.com.
And I take it I'm still off the charts.
Off the charts. I did notice on the Google Play, I looked at the sports and recreation podcasts, and you are there, top 50. Although I'm not sure that means a lot because I'm there as well with my podcast.
I want to be in all genres over there.
Yeah, that's your thing.
I'm hunting down Nancy Grace. I'm coming after you.
Yeah,
Nancy.
That's where you need to be. You'll be back.
And
I have a feeling.
George Stephanopoulos.
Laura Ingraham coming after you too.
Oh, you know what we might be able to do, Ira? Maybe we'll do a bonus podcast next week, a little one, like a little weekend special, and that can tweak things a little bit, get some more activity.
You know, like Steve says, you know, I asked him, how can I get more Twitter followers? He said, change your pattern when you post. Post at different times, you'll reach a different Twitter audience.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, but, it's Twitter's all about patterns, people, right? If you really look at it, most people tweet the same time every day. They retweet the same time every day. Same thing on Saturday or Tuesday. So change your patterns, Ira. New people will see
you. I'm going to do a Gruden tomorrow. I'm getting up at 3:17 a.m.
There you go.
And I'm going to tweet my buns off.
Yep. Next time, before you go to bed, right after you watch those Everybody Loves Raymond reruns you love so much, throw out a few tweets. Say good evening.
I tweeted about Jimi Hendrix the other day. Yeah, you know, can anybody pick up on this? The voodoo child would have turned 76.
I didn't see that.
Yes, he would have on Tuesday. And I even quoted a Hendrix song. I did. Red House. Anybody know Red House?
Yes, I know Red House.
There you go.
There's a Red House story.
Steve, don't you live in a Red House? No, no.
All right. Here's a Red House story. This is a classic.
You have a Red House story?
Yeah.
All right.
I told you I got to, when I was in college, I was invited to the White House. Ronnie, My fraternity had a what they call the conclave in Washington, and Reagan was in our fraternity, and he invited us over, us being myself and 150 other guys. And so we got a private tour of the White House. At any rate, we just on Saturday night, we're going through Georgetown partying, you know, and there was some guy, street musician, had a little Marshall amp, had a guitar, he was playing. Lord knows how many beers I had in me that night. I was pretty hammered. That was the infamous night about the chicken and the leopard skin. I told you about that before.
What's the over-under on the beer count?
Oh, my gosh. That night?
13
11.
And a half?
11.
I think, yeah. Anyway, so I see this guy across the street, you know, a street musician.
Had his guitar case open for a little
while. Oh, he's strumming something. I don't know what it was, you know, a short black guy. And I'm across the street, and again, I've had a few beers, and all of a sudden I yelled, "Hey, Hendrix, play something." And he raises his right hand and goes, "Yeah," and starts cranking out Roadhouse.
See that, Steve? The Kemper and I, we're very eclectic in our tastes.
It's too bad there wasn't a reality show of Lee in 1984 following Moran. It would have been a lot of fun, I think.
He's getting into the White House. I'm trying to get into White Castle. I mean, that's the difference between us, Stephen.
All right, now it's that time of the podcast where we get to the picks. The picks are grand predictions that everybody spends a lot of money on, that we all know IRA people invest based on your predictions. And, you know,
I am 7-4, Lee. I think I'm in first place. I believe I'm ahead of Isbitz. I believe I am.
Well, I do know that Javier keeps track of this. Thank you, Javier.
I have the reverse record of the Bucks. I believe I'm 7-4, Stephen.
You're 7-4, Ira. I do have a game on you, and Lee's a game behind you.
I know.
Wait. You're 8-3, Steve?
This is correct. Javier is the official referee for these picks. And
8-3, that's high cotton.
I think Javier calls himself a notary.
You sure you're not getting that mixed up with your fantasy league record over there, Steve?
No, I'm not even.
I thought I was in first place. All right,
I'm in first place. All right. We all tied last week because we all had the Buccaneers beating the 49ers. It's on Twitter, so we'll.
I'm going to go last today, gentlemen. Who wants to go first?
Ira's going last. All right, I'll step up first. I'll step up to the plate. All right, I'm going to go against my grain here a little bit because I want to put you away, Ira, because I am up by a game.
Why does he want to put me away, Lee?
I want to win, right?
That doesn't sound friendly.
The idea is to win the picks, right? So I'm up a game with 5-2 go. And I'll keep it a little bit interesting. And I think the Bucks' best chance to win the remaining this season, very good chance that is on Sunday against the Panthers. So now it could be at the end of the year, final game against Atlanta. However, I'm going to go with the Bucks. So I'm taking the Bucks to win this game 24-23. Carolina's struggling. Bucks defense is better at home. Bucks kicker seems to be better than Graham Gano right now. And while I think the Bucks linebackers are going to have a disastrous day, I think, you know what, the pass rush might get a little bit better, and there's a little more confidence in the secondary. Maybe a play is made. I'm believing in Jameis playing a clean game. He's been forced into all kinds of turnovers against Carolina. He should have learned his lesson from last year. So, Bucks 24,
Panthers 23. That's a very reasoned argument by Mr. Isbitz, Lee. Very well said, Stephen. You might be wrong, but very well said. Lee, what do you say?
I'm really happy that you brought up Andrew McCutcheon. That's inside
that's
joke for people.
Segue.
I know, that's one of your best ones.
No, we're pinning you down to a pick. You got to make a pick.
I'm actually torn on this because I think the Bucks are playing better. They certainly play better defense at home, you know, on the road or atrocious.
And the Panthers are not playing well.
Panthers, yeah, they're in a rough patch. I'm going to have to go with the Panthers, but it'll be close. 27-24 Panthers.
And I have the deciding vote here, as it should be on this podcast. And, of course, I'm trying to pick up games on Isbitz, so that's a compelling reason. And I believe the Panthers will win this game. I think the Bucks will be competitive. McCaffrey will be a beast out there, a big, big test for the back seven of the Bucks. I think Carolina's too good a team to go on a four-game tailspin. I just they've lost some tough games. Rivera went for the two. They didn't win. Last week it was back and forth. They lost a nail-biter. I think the Panthers come in. The Bucks played better defense at home, so they're not going to give up 38 points. But they'll give up 27, the same number you picked, and I think the Bucks will only get 16, 27-16 Panthers, Steve.
All right, Sage. Look, you know what? We still got time, and I look at it this way. If I'm right, obviously Bucks fans are ecstatic, and people are dancing in the streets and hope returns in a big way, but it'll totally flummox you guys because if the Bucks are better, then you'll start thinking about your picks. You'll start second-guessing, and maybe I can officially put it away.
And then people are going to start thinking about finishing the season with a six-game winning streak, even with the Saints coming to town, and the ramifications for Cutter and Light and this and that. You know, look, I'll be the first to say, you win your last six games, there's not going to be regime change. And Winston will be back. So you got to use a perfect storm, baby. Perfect.
Yeah, I think that would be an NFL first to win your final six games and get fired. I would think that would probably be
probably
first in NFL history.
So we won't be talking about John Harbaugh and Mike McCarthy. And I got a new name, Zach Taylor. I'm going to throw that in the mix.
Oh, the quarterback coach.
Yeah, Lou. Zach Taylor. Keep your eye on Zach Taylor, guys.
Did he not Did he not have a cup of coffee with the Bucks one year?
I think he did. I believe he did.
Yeah, with Gruden.
I think he was a college quarterback. Might have been at Nebraska. But I did think he had a cup of coffee. I don't even remember the guy.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, like they bring in all these, you know, the camp meet in the spring.
You know, you want to go young, you look at a Zach Taylor. He's done wonders with Jared Goff. That's we'll talk about it more on a future podcast, but I'm hearing that name a little bit being circulated.
Now, when you say ending a season on a six-game streak, does that also include postseason? The reason why I asked, didn't Marty Schottenheimer get fired after a three-loss season or a two-loss season?
Yeah, 14-2, I think he was. Wasn't he 14-2?
I want to say so.
Did he get fired after that year?
Yes. I guess his playoff record caught up with him. It finally caught up with him. And, you know, but Marty Schottenheimer was a heck of a coach.
He was a good coach. Football coach. Regular season is fantastic. Now, postseason is a different animal.
Can I blame him for the fumble? For Ernest Byner's fumble? Can you blame Marty Schottenheimer? They win that game.
Who was it?
They don't fumble.
Was it Rodney Harrison? Who was it that fumbled with the. Not Rodney Harrison. Was it Ladini? No, it was defense. When they played New England in a playoffs at San Diego, I think it was the same year, 14-2 year, somebody picked off Tom Brady, and like a mook, he tried to return it, and he fumbled. The Patriots recovered.
Well, maybe it was Harrison.
I'm thinking it was Rodney Harrison. And the Patriots scored on that very drive, and that won the game for him.
Yeah.
It was in the fourth quarter. They basically, that interception had sealed the game for the Chargers. And like I said, whoever the Mama Luke, that's one of your favorite words. Whoever the Mama Luke was tried to return the ball, he fumbled. Patriots recovered and scored a touchdown.
Steve, based on my prediction, we're not going to be talking about ending the season with a six-game winning streak.
Well, it is a neat nugget to look up. I'm going to go look it up. I'm curious if those Chiefs won six to close the regular season. There's a reasonable chance they did, since they did. Those Chargers.
Chargers. Yeah. Chargers.
Those Chargers. And I don't know. It's a fun nugget. But let's not get too crazy, Ira. We're just making a prediction.
Allie Sherman.
Now, this name you brought up here, tell the good folks 30 seconds on this hot candidate.
Played quarterback in college. Was on John Gruden's staff for a cup of coffee, like Lee said. I believe that's true. Probably 08, Gruden's last year. Bounced around a little bit, but he ended up with Sean McVay on that staff. And he's given a lot of credit for the development of Jared Goff, who was considered perhaps a bust early in his career. And now we just saw him on Monday night, strafe my Chiefs. Goff's a heck of a quarterback. He's playing at a tremendous level. He's got Gurley. He's got some good weapons around him, no question. Zach Taylor is going to be an intriguing candidate because there's going to be five openings when the season. There always is. Mm-hmm. You know,
there's always a surprise, it seems like, too.
Yeah. You know, the Todd Bowles of the world, and, of course, Cleveland's open right now. And, by the way, Bruce Arians is, I guess he's sticking with his thing. The Browns' job's the only one I would consider. I say balderdash. How do you like that word? Balder. You know what it tells me? It means he's opening the door to come back. That's all it tells me. And the Browns job's the only one open. No wonder he's talking about the Browns job. You don't want to talk about Dirk Cutter. There's protocol in this league. And Arians respects that. And good for him. But Zach Taylor, well, I'll do a little more research on him. We'll go forward with him. We'll see.
Zach Taylor, if I remember correctly.
It's Z-A-C.
Yeah, Z-A-C. If I remember correctly, here's another Chucky connection. If I remember correctly, he played for Bill Callahan at Nebraska. Obviously, Bill Callahan was a Chucky disciple.
Nicely done, Lee. There's another guy, John DeFilippo. We've talked about him.
Vikings.
Steve, I think he's held in high regard in league circles.
Yeah, he really is, and he's a very interesting guy. Super high energy. I have a lot of respect for anybody who Mike Zimmer would handpick and Doug Peterson would handpick to work with his brand-new rookie quarterback in Carson Wentz. And a lot of young energy. If you're looking for the hot young name kind of thing, he's a neat guy, 40 years old, and just a very interesting background. But, Sage, Let me throw this out to you since we're talking about coaching names, and really we're just being realistic given the situation here at One Buck Palace, which was where we are today.
Didn't ESPN just weigh in and say Cutter's as good as gone, basically?
Pretty much.
Oh, you know, that's a real big, tough take right there. But Jim Schwartz is a guy I wrote about the other night.
You love that guy. You do love him.
Hey, Lee loved him as a defensive coordinator, and I think he would have been better than Mike Smith. Fair bet right there. And he's an interesting name because he took over a winless Lions team with ownership and leadership there that surely was not considered.
So he replaced Marinelli?
Yeah, okay. Not considered good in this league. And he had him in the playoffs in 3 years. That's a rock zero to the playoffs turnaround with a young quarterback. You know, things were up and down for him there, but
he's pretty volatile, right, Steve? A little bit volatile.
Yeah, he's volatile. We remember his run-in with Jim Harbaugh. If everybody remembers that, you can YouTube that if you want to see it. But I like the fact that he moved on and has sort of, you know,
he's resurrected himself.
Doing his thing as far as just being the good soldier as a Bills defensive coordinator, where he had a ton of success, and also with the Eagles, where he just won a Super Bowl. So, you know, he's not the worst candidate in the world.
No, man knows his defense.
Please. Yeah, here's one for you, Ira. The last Super Bowl, you know, Eagles beat the Patriots. You loved it so much going up to Minnesota. Well, you know, you and I are like two ships passing in the night. I leave, you arrive. Well, I was up there for Super Bowl media night, the same period the Eagles, when they had Eagles out there,
when you talked to Ronald Darby.
Well, I was going to say ambush Darby, but okay. Right. And I asked Schwartz, I mean, directly asked him, I said, were you in negotiations with the Bucs to be the defensive coordinator when Dirk Cutter took over? He didn't like the question, but he was polite about it. He's like, I'd rather not talk about that. He goes, I'll answer any Eagles question you have, but anything outside of that, you know, and what I do and what I interview with, I'd rather not discuss that.
That brings up, that if that's true, and there was some truth to that, Steve, that brings up one of those what might have been scenarios.
Sure.
Schwartz, come here.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll throw another what might be scenario is just, of course, you know, we're all speculating at this point. And that's all it is.
Spitballing, right, Stevie?
We're spitballing intelligently, but Schwartz will be a candidate. He's a guy who's interviewed. So is DeFilippo, interviewed last year for head coaching gigs with the Bears. He was considered like the runner up. But I think if the Bucs have success offensively through the end of the season, if they keep scoring points at the rate they are, if they continue to be the number one offense, hey, I could see Team Glazer looking at a guy like Schwartz and saying, would you be willing to keep Todd Monken? I think you guys would get along. A possibility, I think.
Very, very interesting. We'll see what happens. Guys, we're facing another January of change. And by the way, and I don't mean this from a Buck perspective, but I do mean this. You're talking about Schwartz getting a second chance. A lot of coaches get second chances. And Lee, this is directed towards you. What about at least bringing Raheem in for an interview, one of these NFL teams that are going to have an opening, whether it's the Jets or the Browns or whatever? I think he's grown up a lot, Lee. And he's resurrected himself on both sides of the ball. That's not easy. Most coaches can't do that.
Well,
work both sides.
I think it was about a year ago I started changing my tune about Raheem. And specifically, it was in relation to Josh McDaniels. Now, the more, and Steve has written basically the same thing more times than probably I have, but the more you look back on that 2010 season with the Bucs that Raheem had, how he got that team to 9 wins.
10.
Ten wins. How he got that team to 10 wins, should have been 11. Jim Schwartz's Lions got over on Raheem's Bucs, and that cost him a playoff. How he did that, the longer we step away from that, the better it looks.
The Glazers told me they had more fun that year as owners and being proud of a franchise, except maybe for the Super Bowl season. I mean, that's a strong statement.
You know, I'm going to say something about Raheem in this base.
Because they never expected to win 10 games that year. Never.
Well, that's what I mean. No one expected that. And as Steve likes to point out, Freeman was throwing to Mo Stovall. And they had 10 wins. Of course, he was the only receiver. But
Josh was great that year. You know, let's give him his credit.
Well, you know, I'm going to say this, and this is it's going to be an outrageous statement.
It wouldn't be the first one,
but this is going to rankle people in more ways than one. When people claim, especially people of color, claim that the NFL is an old boys network, and yeah, there are people of color, African Americans, Hispanics that are coaching in the NFL, there's still a long ways to go. I point to Raheem and Josh McDaniels. Josh McDaniels never had a winning season, yet every year he's propped up as a coaching candidate. And last year, he even did the unthinkable. Yeah, I'll take that job and write hours. Hours, less than 24 hours, they're going to have a press conference to announce him. He's like, nah, I'm good. You're not Bill Parcells. Parcells can get away with that. You aren't Bill Parcells. When's the last time Raheem's been interviewed for a head coaching job since he left the Bucks?
And Steve, speaking of
McDaniels. And he won 10 wins. McDaniels nothing.
You know, Lee brings up McDaniels. Let's be honest. For the most part, the Belichick coaching tree has failed.
Thank you.
They've been miserable failures as head coach. You know why? You need Belichick. You don't need plan B.
So when people say the NFL is an old boys network, Raheem's walking exhibit A.
I just think Raheem would be a lot more prepared the second time around. I just think he would.
I think so. I think part of that goes to, I agree with everything you guys said, but I think part of that goes to the whole obsession and the whole fantasy football wave of obsession with offense. You don't really see defensive coaches propped up or celebrated by the media or fans getting advance excited about, oh, this guy's going to make us a top eight defense. You don't hear that very often. You hear the opposite. Now, of course, Ron Rivera is a great example of being a defensive guy, and he's brought in his guys and worked the offense, and you know, we're going to see them on Sunday. Excellent offense there.
Look at Marvin Lewis, though, Steve. They're getting torched, the Bengals. They can't stop anybody.
They got a lot of injuries,
and
too.
And, of course, that was a classic rant. Lee, why don't you tell our listeners
what
they can find on YouTube?
Yeah, well, they can find it on JoeBucksFan.com. I have a link. It's buried under the Morning
Classic.
Cup of Joe.
It's a classic.
It's Wednesday morning. Morning Cup of Joe. There's a link there. Stephen A. Smith, who I respect him and I appreciate how he got to where he is. I don't necessarily care for his shtick that much, but he had the most beautiful anti-Marvin Lewis rant. I mean, it was beautiful. This ought to win a Peabody Award. I mean, he started off very slow, very calm, almost in a hushed tone, where he said, "Marvin Lewis should be fired by the top of the hour."
It was a classic rant, Steve. Almost worthy of this podcast. It was a classic rant.
If he's got a better rant, I have not seen it.
But I think we can all say with absolute clarity and certainty that if Marvin Lewis hits the free agent market as a coach, he ain't going to be at one Buck place. Not a chance in
the world.
You
don't think so? No.
Not a chance in the world. They turned him down once.
Well, I know they turned him down once.
And he hasn't done anything in 16 years to change that.
Could you argue look who he's working
no,
for?
No.
Like, Mike Brown's the guy that runs that organization. Let's be honest.
No, that would cause absolutely zero buzz in Tampa. In fact, it would have everybody out in pitchfork.
Well, you know, you got a good point when you say buzz. I know the family that operates the Bucks runs, they're in the splash. They like splash. He's a splash, all right, but it deals with the toilet.
I understand.
Hey, if you're 0-7 in the playoffs, which I believe he is, that's not ownership. That's you just losing seven games.
Never won a playoff game.
And, you know, he was, I don't remember how many they were favored in, but there were a few.
Twice to Pittsburgh he was favored and he lost.
Yeah, that's just him failing. So I can't blame it on anybody else. So, hey, you got to the playoffs seven times. You lost, went 0-7. That's hard to sell that as the next Super Bowl head coach. All right, Ira, we've hit all the elements. We got a football game Sunday. Send the good folks out of here. Coming to Raymond James Stadium Sunday, back-to-back games. Here we go, Ira. What should they know?
All right, I'll tell you this. If they should beat the Panthers, who are still a good football team, you know, they were 6-2 for a reason, and they haven't won since playing the Bucks. If they win the Bucks, and they're underdogs at home, as they should be, Lee, it's going to change the conversation a little bit in this regard. There's still that feeling that, they beat the 49ers. Remember what DeMar Dotson told me in the locker room? You know, it was in my column the other day. That's a team we should beat. We're better than them. And for Dotson to say that, you know he's speaking for 52 other guys over there. This is not a team that Nate should necessarily beat. And with the Saints on the horizon, they got to lose one of these times. I mean, I hope they're not going to win their last 15 games, although it's possible the way Brees is playing. You hear that, Russo? Top 10 quarterback, Drew Brees. It would validate the way the Bucs are playing a lot more than a win over the 49ers, a lot more.
All right, get out of here, Aaron.